Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, how many streaming services do you subscribe to? Do you even know? With all the price hikes over the past couple of years, there's a good chance you may be paying more than the cable bill you were getting rid of. We'll talk about how to avoid the subscription creep that comes with cord cutting. Also this morning, happening around town, the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame will hold their annual induction ceremony and banquet this weekend. We'll get a look at this year's honorees and an update on spring programs and happenings from the Hancock County OSU Extension. Jennifer Little will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, April 11th, 2024. You remember it was quiet quitting for a while after the pandemic, and workers felt very empowered. You remember the trend of quiet quitting, where we just do just enough to continue to stay employed, but no more, right? That was, for a while, that was the big trend. I don't know if that's such a trend anyway. Here's the latest workplace trend. It is called resenteeism, where employees work less hard because they don't enjoy their jobs. So is this really a new trend, or is it just a new name for quiet quitting? I don't know. It is similar, they say, to quiet quitting, but resenteeism is an employee's tendency to offer low productivity because they are resentful. This apparently happens because they have to stay at their job because of financial obligations and responsibilities, but they're not ready to leave the company. Signs of resenteeism are a lack of passion, decreased engagement, and reduced performance. Over time, says Jennifer Libby, district manager with Insperity, Kansas City, Missouri. It's kind of a an employee motivational company. Over time, workers begin to resent their employer because they feel trapped in a job they do not want. If employees want to try to escape these factors by searching for a new job but cannot find one, they may experience resenteeism. So, interesting. Do you know someone at your workplace who may be suffering from resenteeism? Kind of interesting to start your day here as we're just getting rolled on out of bed and ready to get at it for another work day. If you are one of those morning exercisers, if you are up early this morning, get your exercise in before you head to work, maybe you are missing out. Maybe that is not the best idea. Exercising at night might instead be best for your health. Researchers at the University of Sydney in Australia assessed data from about 30,000 individuals who participated in this study to see how the time of moderate to vigorous physical activity impacted health outcomes over an eight-year period. So they're looking long-term here, relatively long-term. The physical activities ranged from brisk walking to bicycling to gardening and sports that get your heart pumping. The participants were broken up into groups based on when they are typically active. And following up, after an eight-year period, they tracked the number of people in the study who died of whatever cause, as well as new diagnoses or diagnoses of cardiovascular disease and microvascular disease. And they found, long and short of it is, they tracked these people for 8 years. And again, they split them up over, you know, when they typically got their exercise. And they found that those who exercised in the evening had lower risks of death from any cause. They had lower risks of cardiovascular disease in general and lower risks of microvascular disease. So they conclude that exercising at night might be the best option for your health. But keep in mind, keep in mind that this was from the University of Sydney, the land down under, where everything is reversed, where everything is backwards, right? They have wintertime in July and summertime in December, and the water swirls around the toilet bowl in the opposite direction in the southern hemisphere. Isn't that what they say? I've never been there, so I don't know. Maybe this is the same thing. Maybe it's backwards in the land down under. Because, but that's what they say. So I'm late on this. I mentioned it on Monday after the men's NCAA basketball championship went to UConn. And on Sunday, South Carolina beat Iowa in the women's championship. And we mentioned that the women's title game broke all kinds of viewership records, and we were saying it would be interesting to see what ratings the men's game drew in to compare the two. Well, those numbers are in case you haven't heard. The women's championship game on Sunday had more viewers than the men's game on Monday for the very first time in history. About 18.9 million viewers tuned in to see the Gamecocks beat the Hawkeyes for the women's title. That is roughly four times more than the number of viewers for the women's final 2 years ago, 4 million higher than the 14.8 million who watched the men's final, where Connecticut beat Purdue. 4 million more people tuned in to the women's final. Now, there are a couple of caveats here. Couple of asterisks to that. The earnings of the women's championship brought in significantly less than the men's did. The women brought in $6.5 million compared to $873 million for the men's final. Partly because the networks charge more for the men's game in terms of advertising. And then when you talk about revenue, obviously they held the men's final in Phoenix with like 60,000 people, and they had the women's final in Cleveland with about 20,000 people in the stands. So big difference in terms of attendance. Although, can you imagine being in the upper deck of a football stadium trying to watch a basketball game? I mean, you can go to the game and not watch it. But anyway, I digress. Plus, keep in mind, now, there's no question that the women's game has grown in popularity, and you can thank Caitlin Clark and a lot of other players that have elevated the women's game. But keep in mind, the women's game was on a Sunday afternoon when pretty much anyone could tune in. It was on a weekend afternoon where the men's game didn't tip off until 9:20 p.m. on a Monday night. So that might have something to do with it, too. And the women's final was on broadcast television, was on ABC, where the men's final this year was on TBS, so it was relegated to a cable channel and streaming, which is not as big of a deal as maybe it once was, but still, those channels tend to draw in less viewers overall than the broadcast network. So there were a lot of factors to that. Maybe I would suggest to the NCAA, maybe if you put the men's game on a weekend afternoon, you might boost the ratings. I don't know. I'm just saying, put it on when people can stay up and watch it. Just something to keep in mind. And I saw this. I thought it was kind of interesting. We were talking, again, this is another follow-up to a story we were talking about what, I guess last week, I think it was sometime. The cherry trees, the cherry blossoms are in bloom in Washington, D.C. And if you have ever been to the nation's capital and seen the cherry blossoms in bloom, it is just a stunning sight. It is just incredibly beautiful there along the tidal basin where they have the cherry trees. Originally, now you know that the cherry trees there in Washington, D.C. were a gift from the nation of Japan back in, what I think, 1912. And so it was, they were given, and they're tearing them out, or they're tearing a lot of them out, because they have to do some work around the tidal basin, which fronts the Jefferson Memorial and the National Mall. And construction on parts of the basin, they need to shore up the wall that holds the basin in. And so construction means they've got to remove a number of those cherry trees. Well, yesterday, just so happens, ahead of this construction and the removal of those trees, just so happens that the Prime Minister of Japan is in Washington this week. And yesterday, he announced that Japan will gift 250 new cherry trees to replace the ones that are going to be taken down. It is the Prime Minister of Japan, Fumio Kishida, said the new trees are a gift for our 250th anniversary in 2026 will be America's 250th birthday. And so that's why 250 trees. So that's kind of cool. They're going to replace the trees. Well, that was neat. And one final item here among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Yesterday, we got the Consumer Price Index report for March. And if you have done any shopping lately, you probably knew what was coming. The latest CPI report finds inflation is getting worse, and that is not good news for those who are hoping for an interest rate cut from the Federal Reserve. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported yesterday that inflation came in hotter than expected for the third report in a row. The CPI showed prices 3.5% higher compared to a year ago, which means you're spending more on food, gas, shelter, and everything else. Moody's chief economist Mark Zandi broke it down by dollar, did the math, and I just thought this was interesting to give you, put that in perspective, 3.5%. Americans, he says, are spending $227 more a month compared to a year ago on the basics, $534 more compared to 2 years ago, and $1,037 more compared to where we were 3 years ago. So I just, that was kind of interesting in terms of putting an actual number to that. I know it's not a real cheery story to start with this morning, but interesting nonetheless. There you go, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, rainy and windy today, a high in the upper 60s. More showers tonight, a low around 50. Findlay City Schools has been honored with the Momentum Award by the state of Ohio for the remarkable progress and growth achieved during the 2022-23 academic year. Superintendent Dr. Andy Hatton says results like this are possible because of the synergy and collective effort of their amazing staff.
We have a great team in Findlay City Schools, deeply committed to the academic growth and achievement of each and every student. While this recognition is certainly a moment to celebrate the hard work and dedication of our teachers and staff, we will continue to strive for excellence and finish this year strong.
Learn more about the award and get more of our conversation with the superintendent in this story on our website. Ohio's former top utility regulator, who is facing federal and state charges, has been found dead in a suspected suicide.
Franklin County Coroner's Office confirming the death of the former chairman of the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, Sam Randazzo. Randazzo was facing federal and state charges in relation to the $60 million House Bill 6 bribery scheme. He was accused of accepting millions of dollars in bribes from First Energy. He resigned as chairman in November of 2020 after FBI agents searched his home.
ONN's Yolanda Harris reporting. Independent pharmacies in Ohio are closing at an astonishing rate.
The fewer the pharmacies, the harder for customers to shop for better prices. Since 2014, more than 250 independent pharmacies have closed across the state. Pharmacy benefit managers control 80% of drug prices. They determine which drugs your insurance will cover, where you get your prescriptions filled, and your copay.
ONN's Kevin Landers reporting. If you want to get your hands on one of those Findlay Eclipse banners that have been lining Main Street, you're in luck. The city says the banners will be available for purchase on a first-come, first-served basis beginning on Monday, April 22nd. The banners will cost $50, and to purchase one, stop by the mayor's office at the municipal building. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, you know, cable and satellite TV providers have lost over 20 million subscribers since 2014, and 30% of Americans who still have cable TV say they are likely to cancel. The draw of cord cutting, of course, was supposed to be the cost savings over traditional cable bundles, but streaming services have lately been hiking their prices and squeezing consumers just the same. With us once again is CNET Managing Editor Nick Wolny to talk more about this subscription creep, as you call it, Nick. And one of the really problematic things here is that we set these things up on auto pay and automatic renewal, and it really becomes easy for this to start eating an ever-growing hole in our budget.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it brings up a great point in that the pain of the recurring payment is quite numbed. You know, you do that initial sign up and then you really don't have to think about anything else in terms of those charges continuing to happen monthly. So we recently completed a new survey at CNET, interviewing people and asking them about their subscription habits. Some of our findings were that overall for subscriptions, not just for streaming, but for just total different subscriptions,
yeah,
the average is $91 a month, so over $1,000 a year.
Wow.
And streaming, we definitely saw as by far the most popular. And so as these different services start to hike up their rates, you know, it's hard enough to set a budget and stick to it without it also having to be a moving target.
Right.
And some of the services are, you know, doing double digit increases when they increase their prices. So it's something for consumers to really be aware of.
You bring up a good point. We talk about streaming services because that's really the biggest chunk of this. But nowadays there are subscriptions for just about everything. And because we don't get a bill in the mail anymore, in most cases, we don't always immediately realize when the cost is going up.
Yeah, I think that we saw a lot of the, in terms of survey respondents, one thing that was surprising was that e-commerce came in second for different types of subscriptions. And just kind of think of that Amazon Prime effect. And now you have all these big box retailers, they've been playing catch up for years. Mm-hmm. Well, they haven't really competitive for years, to be totally honest, but now they are becoming competitive. You know, you have Walmart Plus, you have we're right in the middle of Target Circle Week right now. So Circle is a free membership that Target does, and then there's Circle 360, which is a paid upsell. So the idea of paying for a monthly membership in order to get access to these additional perks, better shipping, free shipping with a smaller minimum, things like that, extra coupons, digital couponing. Couponing is making a comeback, which I'm happy about. But, you know, all these different things. And it's like, hey, if you pay for this monthly subscription, you know, you'll be able to get access to these additional perks. And in the moment, that is really tantalizing, really exciting. But what a lot of people don't think about is that once it's on that auto pay, it's just, it's yet another thing that you've got your credit card on file or your debit card on file for. And it's just charging you each month. And then you look at your budget and you're like, gosh, well, you know, where's all my money going? And for many people, for streaming in particular, you know, they're paying as much now as they were paying,
right,
they were paying with cable in the first place.
Exactly.
Right?
And a lot of these services are notorious for drawing you in with a free trial and then making it hard to cancel or downgrade a subscription. There's been talk of legislation or regulation that would require companies to make it just as easy to cancel as it is to sign up.
Yeah, I think that's just like a recurring regulation effort. Obviously, all these different businesses are going to optimize to make it super easy to sign up, especially in the age of e-commerce where, you know, we have many, many people buying a lot on their phone. You know, it just takes the tap of a button or even, you know, the scan of your face is all you need to do to run your credit card and things like that. And so trying to regulate that and pull that back a little bit more. You know, what was surprising as well in the survey data that we got back was that one of the strategies people talked about is the sort of idea of like the rotation effect or the rotation strategy of just toggling services on, toggling them back off. So fortunately, it's not to the point yet where you have to pick up the phone and make a phone call in order to cancel your subscription on some of these services. And hopefully it never gets there. But what we also saw is that how people are managing the number of different subscriptions that they have is they'll just toggle them off for a few months once their favorite show is done running or their favorite show has come out and they've watched all the episodes. They'll toggle it off. And then when the new season comes back or something else comes up, then they'll toggle it back on. And so for many consumers, they are constantly jumping between two or three or four or more streaming services in order to make it work in the budget.
The only way to make that work, though, is going back to what we were talking about, knowing what all you are subscribed to in the first place. And I know that there are a lot of folks who end up paying for things that they are no longer using, maybe because they didn't even realize that it's still coming out of their bank account every month.
Yeah, another thing that came up in the survey data was nearly half of people who we surveyed had signed up for a free trial and then forgotten to cancel that trial.
Right.
And so they got charged. So it was a service they didn't even particularly want. They didn't want to proceed with it, but they just forgot. And boomers get bragging rights here. Only 28% of boomers were forgetful compared to 65% of millennials and 59% of Gen Z. So boomers can go and rub it in everyone else's face for the rest of the day. But it also, I think, just kind of indicates it, all the, you know, the free deals, the free trials. I was just talking with someone else before this, how the, you know, the 3 months free or the 6 months free has become one of the most popular dangling carrots for things like, you know, you're going to buy a new TV, you can buy a new phone, you're going to buy something else, you know, you get 3 months free of Apple TV, you know, things like that. That's going to start with you signing up for that, right? And often means putting your card on file and you're not going to be charged for the first 90 days, but then you will get charged. Well, if you didn't put a ribbon on your finger, so to speak, to remind yourself to cancel that, then, you know, that's how a lot of people end up getting into this subscription mill in the first place. And so it will be interesting to see if some regulation comes along where it just requires more communication, more upfront communication for consumers to help stop them from digging themselves into a hole.
Now, you mentioned the ways that some people have come up with to sort of track and manage those subscriptions. You mentioned toggling them on and off and so on. There are other ways of kind of keeping this in check, especially for those services or subscriptions that you've decided you just can't live without.
In terms of solutions, what people said, you know, rotation strategy was one of those strategies. Another strategy, the most popular strategy, was just keeping an eye out for deals. Just keeping an eye out for bundle opportunities. You know, if there's an opportunity, just save a few bucks here or there. Or particularly with the increasing popularity for streaming of the ad-supported tier. Netflix famously was like, we're never going to have commercials. We're never going to have commercials. We're never going to have commercials. And now, you know, their ad-supported tier has millions of people on it, right? Because it's just the industry has just changed. I think also it's a, you know, spring is a great time to do your sort of once a year audit on this stuff. Usually people will pick up an extra subscription or two during the winter. You know, it's dark, it's cold, you're inside much more, you want some variety. And now that the weather's starting to warm back up, it might be a good time to just kind of look at your past month's expenses and just see like, oh, okay, I'm paying $15.99 for this and $11.99 for that and $12.99 for that. Well, that was interesting. That was $5 a month when I signed up. And so just kind of doing that audit, you know, getting that awareness piece in there. I don't think you need to be watching it like a hawk all the time. You certainly can if you want to, but most people are going to shift their leisure time and leisure activity during spring as the weather warms back up. And so as you're doing your little spring cleaning, might be a good time to spring clean your budget a little bit too, and just do a quick look at what you're paying money for.
At the very least, be aware of it and you know, keep that in the back of your mind that you may very well be paying for something that you no longer use, or this might be taking a bigger chunk out of your budget than you think. The ironic thing is that there are actually platforms to help you manage all of your subscriptions that you can subscribe to. So
yeah, it's wild. You know, I think it really just speaks to how many subscriptions consumers are juggling now, that on some of these personal finance apps, some of these different budgeting apps, you have like subscription monitoring as a feature. We at CNET, our editor's choice for a budgeting app is Rocket Money. Rocket Money has a feature that will monitor your recurring subscriptions. And if there's a price increase, you'll get an alert. The irony is that that's part of their paid subscription in order to do that. But, you know, for most of these, you know, if it's a small enough rate, just with how many subscriptions people have right now, you know, there's probably some substantial savings to be had.
So it may be worth actually looking into some of those monitoring services, even if that is yet another thing that you have to pay for. It's just an example of our growing complexity of this digital age that we live in. Again, CNET Managing Editor Nick Wolny is with us this morning. We'll link up the survey that you referenced there so folks can kind of dig into that. I know I saw a lot of myself in some of those numbers. Nick, thanks very much thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Well, now our cover story this morning. This weekend, the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame will hold their annual induction ceremony and banquet. And joining us this morning with a look at this year's honorees, Chris Leuthold from the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame Committee. Chris, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks a lot, Chris, for having me here today.
It's always really cool to see the latest class of inductees. And it's really amazing. For those who don't know, this has been how many classes is this? I know it's more than 30 years.
Well, I think we started in 1986.
Wow. So a lot more than 30 years.
Yeah.
More than 40 years now. And I know that way back when this project was started in the 80s, there was the concern that, you know, were there enough people that we could keep this going? How long would this be going? Would you have imagined that, you know, 40 years later, we'd still be adding full classes like this?
No, and I'll tell you why. It's interesting that you say that, because one of the founding committee members was Jim Spike Berry, who was my principal. And at the time, back in the mid-80s, I told him that we're going to run out of people. And he said, no, we won't. There's new athletes every year.
Sure.
So absolutely, we won't run out. Now, I don't know if we can match those first couple, you know, the initial classes are very elite inductees. But right, this year we have a great group. It's one of the most diverse as far as sports is concerned. Two baseball players, but everybody else is just a little bit different. And each have a very unique story.
There are a couple of names that folks will instantly recognize if you follow sports locally. Jerry Blevins, right at the top of the list, is being inducted this year.
Yeah, sure. A 13-year Major League Baseball player. He's our fifth Major League Baseball player to be inducted. He had the longest career. He graduated from Arcadia in 2001 and played baseball at the University of Dayton, and then, you know, the next thing you know, he's in the major leagues, and he was in the major leagues for 13 years.
You know, what amazes me about his story is not amazing, but it reinforces that idea that, you know, kids from small towns, small schools can hit the big time just as well as, you know, these big time D1 players.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And he was a pretty good pitcher in high school, but as far as a high school pitcher, there have been many other pitchers that had better high school careers, and he just seemed to be in the right place at the right time and take advantage of the opportunity that was presented to him. And, you know, being left-handed and 6'5" is a plus also.
Yeah, absolutely. Who are the other nominees or the inductees this year?
Well, Jim Brockman. Jim Brockman graduated from Findlay High School in 1973, right when Findlay was in their heyday for baseball. They won the state championship in 1971 and went back in 72. They were also there in 1970. Jim was on those teams. He played on the American Legion team that went to the Nationals, but he made his name as a college player at Morehead State University, a Division I player. He was a starting shortstop for 4 years and was all Ohio Valley Conference 4 years at Morehead State. So he just had a great college career.
The other inductees include Karen Kin Fox.
Yeah, Karen graduated from Riverdale in 1978.
Okay.
Interesting thing about her, when she started high school sports, her basketball and volleyball were similar to what our current junior high teams have. There was no state tournament. There was no All-Ohio, there was nothing. You played a few games. If you were lucky, you got to play in a postseason tournament, maybe of some local teams. And then when she graduated, though, the Ohio High School Athletic Association was under control of the girls. So she went through that stage there. So She was a pioneer. She was a walk-on at Miami University as a basketball player. And actually, at her senior year, she made the winning basket that put Miami, that gave Miami the MAC championship in the tournament. They went five games deep in the postseason tournament. That in that time, it was called the AIAW. I'm not exactly sure what all that was. The American Interschool. I forget what it is. But
for women.
Yeah, something like that. And so they went five games deep in that and played and beat two Big Ten teams
Kind of interesting. Her career spanned pioneering the sport of volleyball, becoming recognized at the state level, and then women's sports at the collegiate level. So groundbreaker in a couple of different areas. Again, another name that I recognize, and I'm not, and I don't know the full backstory, Brad McVetta.
Well, Brad graduated from Corey Rawson in 1991.
Okay.
And he played, you know, like a lot of players do, he played basketball and football and track.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, he discovered, I don't know how you discover this, that he can swim forever.
Hmm.
And he swam around Manhattan Island, which is almost 29 miles.
Wow.
He swam in from Catalina Island in California, which is, I've got it here someplace, that's about 20 miles, and then he crossed the English Channel. He did this all...
That's impressive.
Well, that's the shortest. He did all that in a four-month period.
Hmm.
And at the time he did that, there were only five people that had ever completed those three in a calendar year, and he did it in 4 months. And that's called the Triple Crown of open water swimming.
Wow. So, and again, it's just one of those things that maybe not a lot of people know, very unique athletic contribution being recognized. Rick Phillips and Helen Stahl.
Well, Rick Phillips graduated from Van Loo in 1971, a tremendous high school athlete, first team All-League in football as quarterback, and there were a lot of good quarterbacks in the fall of 1970. First-team All-League in basketball. Van Loo went to the regional finals that year in basketball, and he scored 41 points in the two games combined in the regional tournament before they lost to Crestview. And in track, he was fourth place in the 120-yard hurdles and fourth place in the 180-yard hurdles at the state track meet.
Yeah.
And he also was their best pitcher.
Yeah.
And so, and then he went to the University of Findlay, as Findlay College at that time, and played football there. And he had the record for yards per catch for about 20 years.
Wow.
And he also punted for the Findlay College.
Yeah. Terrific all around athlete. And Helen's story?
Well, Helen graduated from Findlay High School in 1965, and she was hired at Blanchard Valley School in 1980. And that began a more than 40-year career working with Special Olympics. And she coached track and field right away. And then before her career was over, she helped out with track and field, basketball, softball, swimming, bowling, and tennis teams. And it was not unusual for the local Blanchard Valley School to have more than 20 athletes qualify for the state Special Olympics. Now, locally, anybody can participate. Well, anybody who qualifies can participate in the Special Olympics, but there's no required distance. There's no required speed or time. Anybody can do that, but for state, you have to qualify. And it's not unusual for our local teams to have many athletes at the state Special Olympics.
That is awesome to recognize Special Olympians and those who pioneered that program.
And she was involved with that for more than 40 years, and just a wonderful lady.
We are blessed to have a really strong Special Olympics program here locally, so that is terrific. And then you also have a team induction this year. Some people may say this doesn't seem like it's been long enough to be talking about Hall of Fame, but it's, you know, we're talking 30 years. The 1992 University of Findlay NAIA football champions.
Yeah, they won the national championship. They went 12-1. They lost to Westminster during the season, 30-17. But then they got revenge in the playoffs, and they defeated Westminster 13-7. So a nice little revenge there. And head coach Dick Strom, I think at that time they had four playoff games or maybe five. I'm not exactly sure, but that was just a great football team. And they had quality players at every position. And I'm really looking forward to meeting some of those players. Yeah. I don't think I've ever met any of them. So DeMaio Wimberly is going to speak for the team, and he was the quarterback. I should say Dr. DeMaio Wimberly will be speaking for the team. And he was the quarterback, and just a fantastic football team.
Yeah, just a tremendous legacy in that era for the University of Findlay football program. And how cool is it? Again, you mentioned the accomplishments of many of these individuals beyond just their athletic contributions.
Well, I've met or talked on the phone with all six of the inductees.
Yeah.
And I only knew one of them ahead of time. And so I've talked or met them. And they're just regular people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing how they can just be a normal person. Even right. A guy like Jerry Blevins, who was in the major leagues for 13 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the extent of my meeting Major League Baseball players was limited. Some sort of handshake opportunity or sign something for me kind of thing. And he's just a regular guy. Yeah. And I can say that about all six of them.
Yeah. So the induction ceremony and banquet is coming up on Saturday at the Hancock Hotel, and the event is sold out. But if folks want to visit the Hancock Hall of Fame, you've got a ton of memorabilia and, plaques and everything for all of the inductees at Tony's, right?
Yeah, Tony's Restaurant, west of Findlay on 224 and 15. And it's a really nice restaurant, you know, great ribs, great salad bar.
Yeah.
And all of our plaques are down there. And Tony's doesn't mind if you, while you're waiting for your food, if you get up and walk around and look at the plaques. And if you see any committee members in there, if you would know or ask the waitresses, are there any committee members in there? We are more than willing to answer some questions about anything. And then we also have quite a bit of memorabilia down there, things from Ben Roethlisberger and Dick Strom as we talk about him. Mm-hmm. And hopefully maybe we can get a few things from our six inductees this year.
That is awesome. We've got a link up on our webpage for more information about the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame and this year's inductees, prior inductees. How many members of the hall are there? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but do you have a number?
I don't have the exact number, but it's, I think, more than 250.
Wow. That's
terrific. And what you mentioned earlier about, would we ever run out? And this is really a pretty good class. And I look at the list of people that, that have been nominated recently and have been on the list for a long time. And it's really a really good group.
Yeah. Again, goodmornings.net to learn more. Chris Luthold with us through the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame Committee. Chris, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. I enjoy being here.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
We begin in Tulsa, Oklahoma, first of all, this morning, where Tulsa police stopped a driver on the Broken Arrow Expressway yesterday, going 107 miles an hour in a 65 mile an hour zone. 107 in a 65. The driver said he and his friends were on their way to do laundry. That was their excuse. They had to get to the laundromat to take care of their laundry. I guess he's not going to have any money to do laundry now. The driver was given a ticket for aggravated speeding that requires a court appearance, a fine up to $500 and up to 10 days in jail, where they will provide him with some clean laundry there. He ends up in the slammer. Turns out he was also driving with a suspended license. that is a unique excuse, right? We on our way to do the laundry. I don't know. I mean, for me, I always try and avoid doing the laundry. This guy was trying to get there quickly to get this. I've seen someone so excited about laundry. A Florida woman is facing charges after she was pulled over for driving with only three tires on her vehicle. Police say multiple people reported a woman recklessly driving a dark gray Nissan Rogue without a passenger side front tire on Monday. She was a rogue indeed. Cops pulled over 49-year-old Ann Keller, Seminole, Florida, who claimed she had no idea that she was missing a tire. Authorities say that she failed her sobriety test. Yeah, I can believe that. Driving with only three tires, that's one less than you need. You remember yesterday we had a couple of naked guy stories. A couple of naked guys in the broken news yesterday. Well, in the spirit of equal opportunity, a woman in Mississippi. Well, no, wait a minute. In Louisiana, Slidell, Louisiana. A woman is accused of chasing a man carrying an axe while completely naked. Chasing a man with an axe while completely naked. The woman is now behind bars, according to news reports. The victim in the case told police that he had been helping another man find his way back to Mississippi and went to a nearby patch of woods to check on him. Which sounds just weird. He reportedly told police while he was in the woods, he was approached by an angry woman identified as Angela Wagner, who was also wielding an axe and stark naked. The victim claims Ms. Wagner then raised the axe over her head and began to chase him. He managed to outrun her and made it to his vehicle. Officers say when they found Ms. Wagner, she was fully clothed at a nearby truck stop. They did arrest her for two outstanding warrants. Whether they can charge her with, public indecency, I don't know, because she was clothed when the cops caught up with her. They only have this guy's story to confirm that she was, in fact, naked, wielding the axe. But police say drugs are suspected to be a factor in the case. Naked and wielding an axe. Again, that could be very dangerous. You can hurt yourself seriously. You should not be running around with an axe, especially when you're naked. That's very dangerous. this is an interesting story out of, I don't know exactly where this is. Well, it involves social media. A once married woman can finally file to end her marriage after her missing husband was found following a Facebook plea for his whereabouts. Ashley McGuire went viral on social media after asking for Facebook users' help to find her husband, who allegedly walked out on her and her children earlier this year. Ashley went on Facebook in efforts to track him down so that she could finally close this chapter and move on with her life by getting his signature on a few documents to finalize their divorce. Believe it or not, you know, and we have these stories. How often have you seen these stories about, people losing things, finding them thanks to people's, Facebook efforts? These things go viral, or somebody finds like an old class ring or, something like that and puts it on Facebook, and within hours they track down the owner. It's just amazing. Well, in this case, they tracked down her deadbeat husband 6 hours after Ashley's Facebook post. Charlie was found by the public, and now Ashley has all the information she needs to locate him and get his signature on the divorce papers. Love a story with a happy ending. And how about this? Another story with a happy ending, and speaking of finding things that were lost, a dog that went missing in California recently found in Michigan. The pup disappeared in July of last year. Police in Harper Woods, Michigan, just outside of Detroit, responded to a call about a stray terrier mix and contacted an animal welfare group. The Grosse Pointe Animal Adoption Society located the dog. They were able to corral it and then discovered that the dog had an identity chip implanted in her. It turns out her name is Mishka, and the dog's owner and his family live in San Diego. As it happens, they were already planning to travel to Minnesota, and so when they arrived in Minnesota, they then drove 10 hours to Michigan to retrieve their dog. It's been missing since July and showed up outside of Detroit. Isn't that... Again, I love a story with a happy ending, but it is unknown how in the world the dog ended up 2,300 miles away from home in California to Michigan. Wow. But I love a story with a happy ending. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. The odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
How to stay safe when a tornado threatens. The best thing to do is make sure you're prepared. Know your area's tornado risk. The Midwest has a greater risk for tornadoes. Know the signs of a tornado and sign up for your community's warning system. Pay attention to weather reports and identify and practice going to a safe shelter. Take an active role in your safety. Go to ready.gov and search tornado for more information. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. And this, I know, is kind of random, but it's interesting nonetheless. A recent poll of 5,000 U.S. adults finds that the single, the average person eats 36 grilled cheese sandwiches per year. It's one of America's favorite comfort foods. Grilled cheese sandwiches. 36 per year on average. That's one about every week and a half. In Ohio, by the way, we're a little bit under the national average at 30 per year. But in all, if the nation's entire population were to eat the average amount of grilled cheese sandwiches in a year, it would be enough to cover 29,180 football fields. All right. Three out of five people say that grilled cheese sandwiches made at home are the best, 62%. 40% say grilled cheese is best at lunch than any other time of the day. Although 24% of people in Mississippi said breakfast is the best time for a grilled cheese. Breakfast? Really? Never even thought about that. And in Oregon, they say it is best as a late night snack. 12% said a late night snack. There was also plenty of debate on what goes on the grilled cheese sandwich. 38% say it's best with ham. But if you put ham on a grilled cheese, you have a whole different dish. It's not a grilled cheese. It's grilled ham and cheese. That's different. But that's what they say. 35% say bacon goes well with a grilled cheese. And I will agree with that. It is very yummy. But most of all, people say just cheese. 32% of people in Ohio say just cheese. That's all. Kind of interesting. Rhode Island stood out for its preference in terms of adding to the cheese. 44% say fresh tomatoes go with grilled cheese. Ew. I would not want a tomato and grilled tomato and cheese sandwich. Over half, 58% of Americans agreed that American cheese is the best option for the sandwich. And yeah, it does. It gets much, you know, gooey and all of that, better than like cheddar or anything else. But American, the best cheese. But the preferred type of bread varied. 23% said wheat bread, 24% said sourdough, and 57% say just plain old white bread is best for your grilled cheese. The poll, the survey, was commissioned by Pepperidge Farm, by the way, conducted by one poll, 5,000 respondents. And overall, they had to, with the perfect grilled cheese sandwich, the hypothetically perfect grilled cheese would be two slices of American cheese on white bread, medium toasted, and cut diagonally. This morning for getting our wires crossed with Jennifer Little, the Hancock County OSU Extension. We originally planned on having her with us on the program today. She was actually going to be with us originally on the schedule on Monday, and then suddenly dawned on us that, hey, that's Eclipse Day. We're going to be talking about a lot of other things on Monday, so we shuffled things around, and apparently somewhere in the confusion there got our wires crossed. This is getting to be a very busy, and probably because things are so busy right now, the OSU Extension office in Hancock County, with spring arriving now, obviously a lot of things going on. So we'll get Jennifer with us on the program here on an upcoming day tomorrow or first part of next week. We'll make sure that we get her here to talk about all of the things that the extension is going on. But speaking of the eclipse, in case you missed it on the program on Tuesday morning, day after the eclipse, Mayor Christina Mern was with us for kind of a post-game analysis, if you will, after all of the planning and the preparation for an event the likes of which we had never seen before and won't see again for another 75 years. We asked for the mayor's thoughts and reactions to what we all experienced. Early predictions that we might double or triple our population, it didn't seem as though that was the case. I know it would be virtually impossible to get a head count, but what was your reaction to the size of the crowds that we did see?
The numbers definitely are lower than what we had been kind of told to prepare for.
Right.
But overall, I was really happy with the volume that we saw because it was really manageable. It flowed well. Our planning all, really yeah. worked the way we had expected. And I think one of the benefits to that was that our team that was working were actually able to enjoy the day as well and be able to experience it. So yeah. I'm really happy with how it all turned out, and obviously no major issues.
We probably got as many people as we could comfortably handle. I mean, all the hotels were full. We knew that. Airbnbs were booked. We did have some people come in, but we had probably the right amount of people for what we could comfortably handle.
Yeah, we knew that a lot of the traffic was going to be day of traffic.
Right.
And so that's where you really don't know what to expect. So mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see what the region overall received.
There are a number of reasons why maybe we didn't get the crowds that were predicted. The path of totality was wider than it was in 2017, and there were more cities yeah. along the path of totality that people could gravitate to. So that probably contributed to it. But you talk about the fact that everything did go smoothly. Give a shout out to all of the folks who helped make that happen.
Yeah, so definitely leading the charge were Rob Martin, Service Safety Director for the City of Findlay, and Jacqueline Holman, Special Projects Manager. They really led the charge and worked closely then with the Chamber of Commerce and Visit Findlay and Economic Development. But then obviously all the department heads for the City of Findlay. Our public works team does an incredible job of making sure that cones and barriers and traffic signals are all, working in tandem to be able to direct traffic and get everything set up and cleaned up, police, fire, but it really was all hands on deck. We had folks from our engineering department and water and sewer distribution that obviously were doing their kind of normal efforts of making sure our plants are operating properly, but also being out and helping set up, tear down, and make sure that the city continues to run. But really, the City of Findlay team is wonderful. I can't say it enough. we're very fortunate to have so many people that take great pride in their work, and they all got to put that on display and did a wonderful job.
And not just for the day. Anyone who was out over the weekend knows that there was a lot of work that was going into preparing for whatever was to happen over the weekend. I mean, this was not just a one-day event for many of those workers. They were busy the entire weekend.
Oh, for sure. You know, even late last week with the rain that we were getting, you know, they were, you know, putting mulch down and doing, refreshing the flags downtown and doing all those things, but it got condensed because of the rain. And then, you know, we had brought in porta potties. So making porta potties were set up. Well, if we get a bunch of high winds, we don't want them flying over. So we had to move them a couple of extra times, you know, all those things that folks didn't see. But we definitely were staffed up more this weekend to make sure even little things that you would never think of at some of our watch sites. Emory Adams is a great example. The security lights turn on automatically, and there's no way without just shutting off the power to that entire area to turn them off. And obviously, we didn't want them coming on during the totality. Mm-hmm. And so our team literally went through and unscrewed the light bulb.
Wow.
So that they wouldn't turn on and ruin the experience for people. And those are things that the team thought of, right? So the public works guys were like, wait a second, this could be a problem, and took care of it.
And to that end, I guess, pretty grateful for all of the preparation. Again, we go back and say, well, maybe the crowds weren't as big as we had hoped for, and maybe we over-prepared, but certainly better to over-prepare than under-prepare, and certainly all of those preparations paid off because we didn't have any major issues with the crowds that we did have.
Correct. And, you know, one thing I forgot to mention is the airport team. They do such a wonderful job of bringing in, you know, and they are a global connection for our community. And they, you know, had 100 planes, and I think we're going to work on figuring out where everybody came from.
Wow.
But they did a really nice job. And I know I heard from multiple of the pilots, you know, we're definitely coming back. This has been a great experience, and we want to see more of the city. And that's exactly what our goal was for the day, was to show off our community, but hopefully get those folks to come back and enjoy it.
And in the end, how awesome was it that just about everybody, not everybody, but nearly everybody ended up with a day off? I mean, again, not knowing what to expect, schools closed, and a lot of businesses, the ones that could, gave people at least part of the day off. And so a lot of us could enjoy the full experience of the day, not just, you know, those, you know, 45 minutes or so right around the eclipse, but could really enjoy the entirety of the day. So it was really nice in that respect.
It was. And you know what? My husband and I always joke that it seems like we get days off when the weather's crummy. So I'm really glad that the weather was beautiful.
Absolutely.
And people were able, you know, we were all able to celebrate and enjoy the beautiful weather. I know lots of people that had, you know, parties at their homes. And it was just a great day to, I think, kick off the spring and know that summer is right around the corner.
Again, part of our conversation with Findlay Mayor Christina Mern on Tuesday in the program with her post-eclipse thoughts and reaction. And if you want to hear our complete conversation with the mayor, you can check out the Good Mornings podcast edition for Tuesday morning's show. Go to goodmornings.net, scroll down to Tuesday's show. You can stream it directly from the website there. You can also listen on demand on the WFIN app, which is free to download from the App Store or Google Play. You can subscribe for free wherever you get your podcast. And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. Of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That, of course, goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media. Sign up for our daily email newsletter, goodmornings.net. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out, make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.